brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, and I am incredibly enthusiastic to bring you this week's episode because I confidently believe it's going to lead to you finding your new favourite podcast, one you even like better than this one. And what are the chances of that ever happening? So I've had a lot of conversations the last couple of years with a lot of folks that listen to this show, and one thing that's clear to me is there's a great appetite for audio fiction and storytelling. You know, we see that in the popularity of the Old Hammer Fiction podcast. Even when I humbly stuck up one of my own audio dramas on one of the episodes a while back, I got a lot of good feedback about that, which was really nice. And, you know, people asking where they might find similar productions, and this is one of the just coming together perfect scenarios, I suppose. So, like, bit of boring background details. Like, I've got this digital photo frame in the house, and it's just a rotation of photos, like, you know, through your whole life, basically. And one of the photos popped up, and I'm sitting in a pub in Bruges. It's the oldest tavern in Bruges. Really nice wee place. This is, what, 7 or 8 years ago now, probably. Sitting there with a lovely chap called Domine de Groot. And Domine is somebody I've known well in the audio drama world for a long, long time now. And, you know, I just had this thought, like, yeah, Domine, he makes fantastic audio drama, you know, really heavily inspired by Warhammer. And I'd lost touch with Domine, or hadn't necessarily lost touch with him. We just hadn't spoken years. I think he, just like myself, he doesn't use social media anymore, but I managed to reach out to him, managed to get hold of him, and just picked up the conversation where we left off a few years ago. So, I told him what I'd been up to with the podcast. He was really keen and enthusiastic. I think he started listening to it straight away. And, you know, I've been listening back to his stuff as well, listening to some new stuff that he's done that I wasn't aware of. And it just seemed perfect, a perfect time to get him on the show. So we sorted that out very quickly. So you're going to love this, the Witch Hunter series. Before we get into the conversation with Domine, I just want to play you this short clip.
The razor-sharp tip of Ludlow's rapier penetrated the dark fabric of the cloak, stuck through the softness of the man's skin, and made its way past a thin layer of musculature into his heart. There was no remorse to be found in the necromancer's yellowish eyes as he looked up to the witch hunter's stern face. Still on his knees, the man's lips curled in a smile. No, a smirk, Ludlow thought. As the light of life left his unnaturally coloured eyes, the smirk turned to a crazed grin, revealing the necromancer's sharp, bloody teeth. Ludlow didn't waste any more time and placed his right foot on his victim's shoulder, using it as a counterweight as he slid the blade in one fluent motion out of the body, which fell lifeless to the wooden floorboards with a dull thud.
Together with my wife, Eileen, we have a production company called Audio Epics, humbly called Audio Epics. And what we create is essentially fantasy audio stories. I hesitate to use the word audio drama because there's, people have different sort of definitions of what that means exactly. So I'll just use the term audio stories, because some of what we do is audio drama, and other stuff could be better described as dramatized audiobooks. In any case, we started doing this years and years ago. As for me, I think it all started on a trip to the UK, actually, when I was 14 years old. And I went into a bookshop. This was in Canterbury, I think, or Dover. And I encountered these cassette tapes. It was BBC's production of The Hobbit. I don't know if you've ever heard those old BBC radio dramas of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I've actually put The Hobbit on my daughter's Yodel player. She's not embraced that one yet, but I'm sure she'll get in it at some point, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd already, read the books at that point and was a big fan. And then I discovered, how they came to life through these, these actors and sound effects. And I was just smitten, really, with the whole thing. And that inspired me to, start doing my own work in the same field, let's just say. It was one of several factors. My grandfather was also an important influence, because he was an audio guy all through his life, and when I was a child, he used to make these little cassette tapes with ghost stories, and he would, jangle his keychains to represent the ghosts with their chains and things like that. And so, yeah, audio as a medium to sort of, let's just say, to stimulate the imagination was something that that really inspired me from an early age. And I think it was around the same time that I got into Warhammer, actually. So it's no coincidence that I ended up sort of combining the two in a way. But for me, the attraction of Warhammer started with HeroQuest. That was a game that I absolutely loved. Still do, actually. I only recently, I actually painted up all my miniatures of my, 30-year-old HeroQuest set. I only just finished painting those half a year ago or something. So I've always sort of really enjoyed the particular approach to fantasy that you got in Warhammer, particularly the older stuff. I've actually listened to one of your earlier episodes today, and I believe You were talking about this as well, the aesthetic. There's a certain unique charm to it. There's a kind of, maybe even a grim fairy tale sort of feel to it, maybe. And, the authenticity of it was something that really appealed to me. And, before we did Witch Hunter, we created a story called The Will of the Woods, which was an audio drama, and it was more of a fairy tale kind of story. It had a more of a, maybe you could say it had some similarities with maybe movies from the 80s like Neverending Story, Legend, movies like that. But at the time, I was getting really interested in Warhammer roleplay. And when I looked through those books, the Warhammer roleplay books, I encountered these images of the witch hunters. And something about the whole, basically really just the look of them really appealed to them. They had this anger and fire and the pilgrim hats that they wore, the Puritan hats. Something about that sort of struck me. It was very dramatic, I felt. And around the same time, I think, the movie Van Helsing came out, the Hugh Jackman film. I was quite looking forward to seeing that, but when I saw it, nowadays I can sort of take it for what it is, but back then when I saw it, I was disappointed that they made it so silly. Yeah, they turned it into almost a comedy. Mm. Whereas I felt that that sort of character had a lot of dramatic potential. I felt, you have the sort of hunter of darkness, you know, what kind of man is this? Has to be someone very unusual. He must be full of, you know, trauma and anger and, you know. And I felt, you know, that movie totally did not convey that. You know, I think that was one of the main things that made me want to create my own Witch Hunter style story, which eventually turned into, well, you know, the Witch Hunter series.
Yeah, I remember, because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but you kind of, you created an initial iteration of the Witch Hunter Chronicles, I think it was, before you did the full book, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'd actually forgotten about that, but it's true. The first version was called The Witch Hunter Chronicles, and it was an audio drama that was about 3.5 hours long. And I later turned that into a full novel, which I then turned into a 13-hour dramatized audiobook. And yeah, that was really the beginning of what is now, you know, becoming a series, really.
I remember, I mean, this is going back 15 years or so. So I was working outside at the time, cutting grass, and I just really got into audio drama. Like, I'd listened to We're Alive, and I was looking for some other stuff, and it was the Witch Hunter Chronicles that I found. So I really loved that. I know that you wanted to enhance it, and you obviously have done that now, but I thought it was fantastic, you know, at the time. And obviously we went on to become good pals, and we worked together on a lot of different projects since then. So
yes, and you've been in one of our Witch Hunter stories, in one of the prequels, The Beast of the Western Wilds, where you performed the character of Rudolph, and did a great job, I have to say.
Did I die? I usually die in these things.
You did die, yes.
I'm the spoiler alert. Sean Bean of audio drama.
Is that so? I didn't know. Yeah. Spoiler alert. You did die, and in quite a gruesome way, actually.
Well, I'll get to, because I'm listening back. I will find my death at some point, I dare say.
But your co-host Robert Cudmore was in it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't
die.
We
come as a pair.
yeah, that's true. But he didn't die, so we could always bring him back. If you want to come back, we're going to have to either make you a ghost or give you a different part.
I mean, I've just started listening through the series. So on the Audio Epics podcast, and obviously I'll put links and everything in the show notes, but it looks like you've got the main Witch Hunter Chronicles story, and then it looks like you've got, is it other self-contained short stories from that story world?
Let's see. Well, the podcast, what we did there was we have the main stories, and they're always in episodes, and they're always kind of the longer ones. And in between, we have these sort of non-fiction podcasts where Aline and I are just talking about movies and games and things like that, which we call the storytelling episodes. We did that because sometimes the wait between one story and the next could be a bit long. And we wanted to make sure that people knew that our podcast was still going. And we have a lot of fun just talking to each other about these things. So we thought, why not just make it a podcast and just include it in the same, under the same banner, so to speak. So there's those. And then there are the main stories. So far, there are four. And the fifth one is actually, we're about to release the fifth one now. We just finished it up. So what we always do is we first write the whole book. Then, you know, we create the whole thing, start to finish. And then we chop it up into episodes and release it so that we can have a weekly release schedule.
The sun was setting in fierce, hot colors as the witch hunter hastened to leave the western wilds behind him. All through the night, Ludlov rode through whispering ferns and tall, shadowy pine trees. The night sky was clear and starry, the full moon illuminating his way east in a silver-blue glare. An owl hooted in some far corner of the woods as Ludlov rode past, but he chose to ignore the omen and press on.
You ever thought about developing a miniatures range for the witch hunter?
Well, actually, the thought has never occurred to me, but that sounds like a really cool idea, actually. So, yeah, let's do it.
Get a wee warband on the go. Yeah, your own characters.
I did mess around in, what was it, Hero Forge?
Right.
Is that website where you can sort of create a miniature for your RPG?
Yeah.
And I did make some of my characters from Witch Hunter in that, you know, just, you know, for myself, but I never even ordered the miniatures. I just sort of messed around in it. Never thought of actually doing that, no.
Looking back at like your sort of childhood or teens playing Warhammer, like what sort of stuff did you collect?
I started with Hero Quests and then Battle Masters, but here in Flanders where I live, it was called Ridderstrijd, which translates as, you know, Knight's Battle. I guess so. That's where I spent most of my time in my earlier years. Let's just say when it comes to these games. And then I bought or got as a present the I think third edition box of Warhammer Fantasy Battle, the one with the High Elves versus the Goblins.
Oh yeah, I think it's fourth. I always make that
fourth,
mistake too.
Right.
Yeah, fourth.
And basically just you know, started adding on to my goblins with orcs from that point on. Because I always really had a thing for the orcs, particularly, you know, the Warhammer orcs, the greenskins. I've always loved them. Always had a thing for them. I don't really know why, but there's just something about them. They're funny, but they're scary at the same time. But I think the game that really excited me was Warhammer Quest when that came out. In 1995, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it as soon as it came out because, you know, having already been a fan of HeroQuest, this felt like, wow, this is like HeroQuest on steroids. And what was amazing was that you could keep on expanding upon it, you know. You could basically use any monster from any army line and just, you know, use them in Warhammer Quest. So you didn't have to just say, oh, I'm sticking with Skaven or I'm sticking with Chaos. You could just have all of it in Warhammer Quest. And from there, me and my friends, we moved more in the direction of RPGs. You know, but I always remember Warhammer Quest as actually some of my favorite tabletop experiences.
Mm-hmm. Were you much of a painter? Did you paint a lot?
Painting miniatures for me has always been like this thing that I occasionally do. So I might paint maybe, I don't know, 10 miniatures. In a year's time, but hardly a year goes by without me painting something.
Mm.
If that makes sense. So I don't have a huge amount of painted stuff, but it's always been sort of there.
Yeah, it sounds like you've always stuck with it then. You've always kind of kept your hand in. Like, have you, do you ever get an opportunity to play games these days?
No, unfortunately. Well, no. What I, these days, what I sometimes do is I'll play a solo game, you know, when my wife is watching a TV show that I'm not particularly interested in or something, and I'll be playing a solo game of maybe Descent with the app, mm-hmm. or Hero Quest or something like that. I've been meaning to get back into RPGs, but yeah, it's hard to. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to get back into it, just to find the time and to find the right group, and hasn't really worked out yet.
Our question of the month for June 2025 is, what would you put in a hobby time capsule? Imagine the human race is about to go extinct. We're filling a big indestructible box full of the stuff that says, this was our hobby, to the aliens who find it in 10 million years. You can put anything in there, miniatures, rule sets, books, magazines, dioramas, pots of paint, the choice is yours. And you can put as little or as much as you'd like in there too. Help fill the hobby time capsule and ensure everything dear to your heart finds a place in there by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and I need them in by Friday the 27th of June. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and now back to the show. Just kind of thinking back to, you know, growing up in Belgium, how accessible was the Games Workshop stuff? Like, was there a Games Workshop near you in Belgium? How, and like the White Dwarf, you talked about reading White yeah. Dwarf, were those English editions or were they translated?
It was all English. And well, I lived near Antwerp, which is a city in Flanders, and there wasn't a Games Workshop store as such yet when I was a teenager, but there were various, let's just say, friendly local gaming stores, which, you know, had a lot of Warhammer stuff. I remember one that I frequented was called The Lonely Mountain, and they were a very cool shop. The interior was all done as if you were actually in a dungeon. They put in a lot of work. They had these, you know, these chains on the wall and like a corpse in a cage. It was very cool, actually. They had a dragon, like a dragon statue, sleeping above the doorway. There was another one called Avalon, the Game Garden, the Red Dragon. They always had English names too, the stores. And you know, they sold war games, they sold role-playing games. I spent quite a bit of time in those. Only in later years did an official Games Workshop store open in Antwerp. And it's still there. And I know the guy who runs it. He's an Englishman. These sorts of things in Flanders, video games and all the geeky interests, they've always been in English and they never bothered to translate them. And I think as a result, the Flemish people tend to, I don't know, they tend to adapt pretty well to the English language. I don't know.
Yeah.
Even though it's a very different language.
So you're talking about like getting the odd wee solo game. Descent, you mentioned Hero Quest. So your mm-hmm. Hero Quest set, it sounds like you were saying that as the original Hero Quest. Like, that is that the one that you've had since childhood?
Yes, actually. Yeah, the one I played when I was 10 years old. I still have that one.
Did you get the TV advert out there? Did they kind of put that on the TV?
The one with the rubber orc?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah. A long time ago.
it captured a lot of hearts back in the, whatever it was, the very early 90s, I think.
It must be something like that, yeah.
It's been quite interesting. I've been listening to a podcast, Jordan Sorcery, so it's a YouTube channel, but he's put them out as a podcast as well. So he's done some, he's done a lot of interviews with, you know, the people behind Games Workshop, and you get a real behind-the-scenes look at the history of the company and the development of all these games that, you know, until now for me were a bit mysterious. You mentioned Battlemasters, HeroQuest. There was that weird thing where, you know, it was kind of Games Workshop's IP, but it was put out by Milton Bradley, and I never really understood, like, how that had happened. But I just... it was Jervis Johnson on an episode that I listened to yesterday, and he talked about that, you know, that collaboration. And it was really interesting because it was Milton Bradley at that time had the capacity to put all these, to mass produce these games and get them into conventional toy shops, and inside these box sets, you know, you had the miniatures, but you also had a little leaflet for Games Workshop and for Warhammer and everything. So it was like covert, well, not so covert, very open advertising inside. And I do hear from a lot of people who say that their first interaction was, you know, firstly opening that box, but then finding this leaflet and you know, going down the rabbit hole. And
it was a great sort of gateway into the larger hobby. I remember one of the first things that struck me when I first saw Warhammer was, this doesn't have like a battle map. There are no squares or anything. It's really just like a little landscape. And that felt so... That was really exciting to me when I first saw it didn't have to be like a board with squares. It could actually be just like a diorama of a battlefield. I thought that was amazing when I first saw that.
Yeah, the sort of freedom of that, like, you know, what to play on, whether it was a tablecloth or just a carpet. I remember a holiday in England when I was a young teenager. We'd went down and found this. I think it was a model railway shop. And there was a felt, like a flock mat, like a green playing mat. It wouldn't be for playing board games on, but, you know, I got that and took it home, and I glued it with PVA glue. I glued it down to this flat piece of plyboard, and then I took a razor and I shaved a river through it, and then the felt off, and then I painted it blue and put a bit of gloss varnish on. I was really happy with that, and got my... You know, at the time in White Dwarf, they used to have the guides, here's how to make a cottage with a cornflakes box. So
yeah, I remember that one.
Cereal box houses and stuff. And it was always great, like, just making the wee towns and villages and pubs and stuff like that. I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, me too. It sort of takes it outside of this very sort of rigid... the rigid confines of a game with rules. There's more to it, you know. There's a whole sort of free aspect to it, where you can just build whatever you want.
You mentioned Warhammer Quest. Did you ever have any of the other boxed games from that kind of era?
Before Warhammer Quest, around the time of HeroQuest, I did used to own... what's called in English Space Crusade.
Oh, yeah.
But for some reason over here, it was called Star Quest.
It's quite a good name.
Yeah, I think they called it that to make it clear that, like, this is the futuristic version of HeroQuest.
Yeah.
But I don't know, for some reason it was called Space Crusade in the UK or in the States, or both, I don't know.
What's your take on sci-fi? Like, I've always known you as a deeply immersed fantasy guy, but, like, you big on sci-fi?
For me, actually, I like sci-fi as well. It's just that I like fantasy more. But I do like sci-fi, especially if it's not sort of the very clean, designed by Apple kind of sci-fi, but more something like Star Wars, or you know, especially when they're on the planet Tatooine, where everything looks a bit more old and rusty and worn down. And so the 40K universe is also something that appeals to me, because it feels ancient, but it's in the future. And that's an aesthetic that I find very appealing.
I seem to remember in the Mists of Time, we had a conversation about an audio drama that you always said you wanted to do. Correct me if I've hallucinated this, but you talked about, you know, ships in space, but, you know, old style sailing ships, but like taking in a sort of space flight concept. Like, have I just made that up, or was there some truth to that?
No, no, that's actually something we've been sort of, I wouldn't say working on, but sort of brainstorming about for years now. Something we might still do in the future at some point. once we're done with all the other stuff that we were going to do first.
Yeah. I mean, going back to my sort of audio drama roots, I am very sympathetic to the fact that the ideas can go at a very fast pace, but the writing is a bit slower, and then the production's even slower still. So you end up with a bottleneck, don't you?
Yeah, we've got the rest of the Witch Hunter series planned out, and there's going to be at least three more after the one that we're going to release now. But we also have a bunch of other ideas and concepts. So yeah, if we ever want to actually get them done, because I'm always kind of surprised at how long it takes to actually finish these things.
And have you done anything else to kind of expand the story world into other mediums? I mean, probably you've got enough on your plate creating it as an audio story, but
I've been dreaming about turning it into an RPG, actually.
Yeah.
Or at least a campaign setting, maybe for Dungeons and Dragons. Because with each story, the world where it is set becomes a little bit bigger. There's a bit more backstory. There's more characters, more creatures, more concepts. And also, I think with each story, it becomes a little bit more its own thing, because at first it was perhaps very Warhammer adjacent, and now it's got more of its own identity.
Yeah,
it's sort of managed, I guess, in a way similar to the way the Warcraft universe started out, because the makers of those games wanted to make a Warhammer game, but they couldn't, so they made their own world. And now the Warcraft universe is very much its own thing.
Yeah, even if you look at, I mean, Tolkien, but you know, when Warhammer emerged from the Tolkien verse, for lack of a better term, and you know, they would have gradually then started to do their own little tropes and themes and build out from there. So, good.
I mean, of course,
jumping off point.
I don't want to insinuate that what we do is anything near that sort of level or scale, of course, but all I'm saying is you can tell that as we progress, you know, the world sort of starts setting itself apart more and more.
Mm-hmm. Have you got a map?
Yes, we've got a map now.
Love a map.
Because at first, the first Witch Hunter story all took place only in this one city, right? And now we've expanded a great deal. There's a whole continent, really. Various countries and, you know. And like Warhammer, it's because it's inspired by Warhammer, the countries and the peoples are all based on basically Europe. So, like in the Warhammer world, you have your Spanish people, and you have your German people, and your French people, and we kind of do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are also Flemish people in our world.
Yeah.
And they play a much larger part than they did in actual history.
1, 2, 3, he sneaks behind a tree.
One of the men kept repeating the same words the entire journey back.
What was that?
Blood and bones. Blood and bones.
4, 5, 6, he hides behind the bricks.
No one who's tried has ever come back.
Precisely. Which is why none of you should go.
7, 8, 9, he'll rip out your spine.
Back! Back! Back!
And finally, 10, he will return again.
Lose another soul under my care. I can't remain a witch hunter like this. I can't. I can't.
Now it's about time we started the game.
I'm going to find you. I don't know how, but I will.
Audio Epics presents The Hounds of Hübschdorf, a witch hunter tale. Written and performed by Domin de Groot and Elin Hoskins.
Talk to us about the fairy tree then, because mutual friend of ours, Michel LaFrance, I would consider him like the world's foremost like 3D audio fiction creator. So my daughter is now listening to the fairy tree on her little Yoto player. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think I knew Michel from back in the day when I was still on Facebook. The audio drama Facebook group that we were all on at the time. And he reached out to me because he had been experimenting with 3D audio for a while. And he had been trying to, you know, present these sort of immersive experiences where it's like a first person experience of being in a certain place through binaural audio, where basically you get a 3D audio experience, but you don't need to have any kind of special hardware for it. Just ordinary headphones will do. And he was looking for something with a bit more with a bit more story content to it. And so he was looking for something fantasy related, which is why he came to me, because I was sort of synonymous with fantasy at the time. Well, still am. And he said that he was actually interested in doing something that, you know, really puts the player at the center of the narrative. So you are the main character, and we were talking about this. And, well, because, you know, we were talking about what kind of fiction has the audience as the main character. And, of course, we started thinking about these choose-your-own-adventure type of books, if you remember those. Well, fighting fantasy,
yeah,
and the like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think he said, well, why don't we do something like that in audio? Which for me was an interesting challenge because that was a completely new kind of storytelling that I'd never, you know, touched on before, branching narrative that could go into several directions. So that was really interesting and fun to write. And I remember that he said, you have to make a choice. Say for example, there's a tree with fruits and you know, you either pick this fruit or that fruit. And for example, you know, if you pick that fruit, that's the good one. If you pick the other fruit, it's the bad one. And I said, but you can just come up with any story you want. But the example he gave to me sort of, it sort of lingered in my mind. And I thought, actually, I think that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool concept. A tree where you have to pick the fruit, you know, echoing some biblical themes, etc. And I thought, why not just make that the topic of the story? A magical tree with magical fruit, and you have to pick the right one. And so the whole story kind of evolved from that kind of offhand remark of his.
Yeah, I'd seen that the first chapter is on YouTube, so I'm definitely going to link that in the show notes so the listener can get a good sample of how it sounds. And like you're saying, I mean, you want to put good over-ear headphones on and even close your eyes, you know, and just 3D audio is just a brilliant experience. It's a whole sort of medium of its own. It's fantastic.
It really is, and I have no idea how he did it all, because when you put on your headphones and you're in that forest, it doesn't sound like, you know, it doesn't sound like you're just listening to forest sounds. It feels like you're in another world. He's very, very detail oriented. You can tell by you know, the sound design is scrumptious.
Well, it's been brilliant to catch up with you again, Damien. And you know, let's stay in touch this time. It's been a few years since we spoke before. I think we both left Facebook maybe about the same time, and that of course has many upsides, but the odd downside where you kind of just lose touch with people. So
yeah, let's stay in touch. Indeed, it's been really nice to catch up, and congratulations by the way on your daughter, because last time we met you didn't have a child yet.
Yeah,
so, it's been that long.
Yeah, I mean, you've got another son now, don't you?
Yes, we have a second son.
What age are your boys now?
The oldest is 8 and the youngest is 6.
Yeah, so he was just in the buggy when we met you.
They've even painted their first miniature.
Excellent. Excellent work.
So
where should the listener go to find and, you know, get wired into the Witch Hunter and the podcast?
You can find the podcast on you know, Spotify or wherever you get podcasts from. The Audio Epics podcast. Most of our listeners, though, for some reason, are on YouTube. And our channel is simply called Audio Epics.
You are about to embark upon a quest.
Master von Baumeister will be your leader on this journey.
The Witch Hunter Order is Seven Peaks' elite force in the fight against evil.
Turmgard is an experienced traveler and has seen his share of combat.
You're not a Witch Hunter yet. It would surprise me if all of us made the trip back home.
Chappelle has only worn the hat for a year, but she has a quick and agile mind and an unwavering faith in our mission.
Whatever remains of their evil, we will drive it out.
Initiates Ludlov, Alvarado, and Federhel, your performance during this quest will be reported back to us.
Have you ever heard of the treasure of Boneyard Bay?
A treasure hunt?
Land ahoy!
So, you're a witch hunter.
My name is Gustav Finsterdunkel, Ludlov.
Would you like to swim the rest of the distance to Boneyard Bay, you worthless purveyor of useless trinkets?
Gustav!
If a giant cave rat or a throttling snake tries to bother us, we'll be prepared.
Do those exist in places like this?
No. Of course not.
I would be cautious around him. Our mission is secret, after all. I suppose I'm just a bit wary of strangers.
No offense, Ludlov. But I think you have always been wary of strangers before as well.
You carry a burden of grief. And yet, you are a man of great faith.
The creature spreads despair. That's its power. What we need is a rekindling of hope.
They used this temple to hide their treasure. What do the words mean, initiates?
It says, those who seek riches must prepare to be tested in body, mind, and soul.
Audio Epics presents a new dramatized audiobook set in the world of Witch Hunter and the Beast of the Western Wilds. The Treasure of Boneyard Bay, a Witch Hunter tale. Coming September 15th.